It's time for Hamilton County Goes to the Movies for May 19th, 2018. This is a podcast all about film, featuring Adam Awson, writer for the weekly publication Current in Carmel. You can read Adam online at currentincarmel.com. My name is Larry Lannon. I write a local news blog from Fishers, Indiana at larryinfishers.com. This week, Adam and I reviewed the film Disobedience, starring Rachel Weisz and Rachel McAdams. We have two great guest segments today. Our first is Nikki Reddington, local business owner with connections to the film industry. We also welcome two HSE high school students that were part of an extracurricular film club and produced a film called Iris. Let's go to Donatello's Italian Restaurant, 9 West Main Street in downtown Carmel. Welcome once again to Hamilton County Goes to the Movies, and we really appreciate you joining us once again. It's an every Saturday podcast about film, and Adam Awson is my partner, as he is each week. So, Adam, thank you so much for being a part of this, as always, and hope you're having a good week.
Yeah, Larry made the rain stop, so he did a good job.
Yeah, it's been off and on. My wife and I tried to have a night out in the town last night. We got stuck in the rain. It was not a pleasant experience. We thought we had beaten the rain, and the rain beat us. But that's hey, it's spring in Indiana. At least it's not snowing, Adam. That's
a rainy day is great for seeing movies.
It is exactly that, too. Well, here's the movie we're going to talk about this week. The movie is called Disobedience. And the movie is directed by a man by the name of Sebastian Lillo. And Sebastian Lillo has done some kind of offbeat films in the past.
Just won an Oscar recently.
He did. But he's done some very good work. And some of it on the fringe, some of it more mainstream. This film is written by him and a person by the name of Rebecca Linkowitz. So the two of them collaborated on this. It's based on a novel written by Naomi Alderman. So we have a couple of big names in this film. This film follows a woman who returns to a community in London, England. She was shunned and left many years before, but her father passes away and she finds out about it, so she comes back for his funeral. But what happens is what happened to shun her comes back once again as a result, because a lot of the same people are still there in this community. It's a religious community of Jewish people in London, very a straight line, if you want to call that. They wear the hats, they wear the uniform.
Yeah.
I think conservative would be a good word to use, conservative type of Jewish people. So with that in mind, Adam, talk about the stars of the film and talk about your views on them.
So, Larry, you saw the trailer for the movie previously because it was aired at the Keystone Arts. You saw the trailer?
I did.
So the twist is in the trailer. Should we say it on the podcast?
If it's in the trailer, it's fair.
Okay. So basically, Rachel Weisz, she leaves because of the community and comes back. She has a relationship with Rachel McAdams, who is still living in the community. And as a result of this lesbian affair, they fear being caught or being judged because it is a very conservative community that may have different views on that. And so it was an interesting film. I didn't know what to expect going into it, because then seeing the trailer, you thought, this could be good, but it could be dry, it could be slow, it could be a snail's pace. I heard someone describe it saying it was a bleak film, which made me think, oh, well, maybe I don't want to see this. But I'm glad that we reviewed this film, because actually I was not bored. I didn't feel like it was slow or overly dry. What we got in this movie was powerhouse acting by two really great actresses in Rachel Weisz and Rachel McAdams. Now, Rachel Weisz, she already has an Oscar for her role in The Constant Gardener, and she's done some great work. Rachel McAdams, on the other hand, I think is just now being recognized as a great dramatic actress. She first was probably known to people through Mean Girls, playing a high school girl. And it's funny, though, was like 30 when she filmed that. And she's done some comedies. Even this year, she had Game Night, which is a comedy. She was nominated for an Oscar once. Can you tell me what movie it was, Larry?
I cannot.
Spotlight.
Oh, was that it?
Supporting actress for Spotlight.
What was her role in Spotlight?
She was one of the journalists.
That's right, she was.
I mean, she wasn't a huge role. I don't think she was ever...
She earned... Now that I look back on it, I remember her character. Yeah, that was a well-deserved nomination.
So, when I ended this film, I already knew Rachel Weisz was a good actress. I've seen her just blow people away. I was really impressed by Rachel McAdams towards the end of the film. And the film builds in my mind. It may start off a little slower as you're getting the relationship and the characters and finding out what's going on. But when it kicks into gear, it's a very dramatic, very tense film with a lot of things going on. The ending, I don't want to give it away. It may break your heart a little bit, but it still ends somewhat hopefully. The characters go on a journey. They change. They grow. And you end the film feeling like, you know, it was worth your time seeing this. Male lead, which I guess he's been in a bunch of stuff, but I wasn't familiar with him, Alessandro Nivola, he was fantastic as well. He's the husband of Rachel McAdams' character, Esty Cooperman, and he's kind of an apprentice, a rabbi who worked under Rachel Weisz's father, who passes away. This film has a lot of nonverbal acting, a lot of looks at each other, a lot of ways that they communicate their feelings, and it's just a fascinating film. Powerfully acted, a great message. There were some lines that I had some real deeper meaning. I'm glad I saw it. I'm going to give it a high mark, Larry. I'm going to say A-, B+. I don't know if it's going to be best picture worthy. I don't know if it'll make my top 10 of the year. But right now, I really enjoyed this film. It impressed me, and I wouldn't change too much about it. I get maybe one or two things.
I give it a B+, and I love this film. Cautionary note, if it puts you off to see two women kissing each other, you probably shouldn't see this film. And there's some insinuation, there's nothing graphic, but insinuation of a relationship between these two. What fascinated me the most was these three people, you know, the husband, the wife, and the woman who comes back for her father's funeral. All three of them, I didn't talk about it specifically, but they appeared to pal around as kids. The three of them spent a lot of time with each other, went through a lot together growing up. And it was the relationship between these two women that caused one of them to go to New York City because she couldn't live there in London anymore. She was shunned by that very conservative Jewish neighborhood where they all lived and the synagogue where they all attended. And of course, her father was the head, the person who was the rabbi everyone looked up to. He was the leader of that entire group. I think that was one of the reasons that she left. She and her father had a falling out over this relationship she had with another woman. And when he dies, she finds out about it to the surprise of some people in London. Most of them in this neighborhood didn't think she would show up for the funeral. Lo and behold, there she is. And the first comment everybody makes is, oh, you're here. Didn't know you'd make it. You know, it was like a shock. They really didn't expect to see her there. And it was a lot of these verbal or nonverbal, if you wish, types of communications. They weren't spoken. You could tell by the expressions on people's faces.
The viewer can pick up on things.
Oh, very clearly pick up on it. But you get this coldness, this, oh, you're here. Oh, hi, you know, nice to see you, but you're really not nice. It really wasn't nice for this particular person to see you. And then she finds out that her father has basically disinherited her, which she did not expect. There are a lot of twists in this film that I found very interesting. It's interesting, 2 weeks in a row we're reviewing a film where there's a very heavy Jewish theme in it with the Yitzhak, the film before. His Jewishness is very much a central part of that documentary film. And in this dramatic film, this is a very big, and it is overshadows everything, really, in terms of what happens, the plot and the story of this film. I had the same sort of feeling you did. I wasn't sure what to expect. I'd heard good things about the film in general, but hadn't read any specific reviews. But Disobedience is a very special film. I don't know where it'll come at Oscar season. You don't know what's going to come out later in the year. I would have to think that many of these performances have to be in the running for a nomination. Now, whether they get it or not, you know, that's...
It all comes down to what is marketed. And sometimes time of the year the movie comes out can play a role. Sometimes the summer movies that are the Art House Fair don't get as much love as the winter ones.
Some of it's political, it's timing, it's so much going into that, but I think it deserves consideration.
There's so much to look into this film. You've heard me say this before. I really like a movie that afterwards you can go grab a milkshake with someone. I'm saying milkshake. I don't know why.
Could be any drink.
Yeah, but milkshake sounds pretty tasty. It's summer. And you can sit there and have a conversation about the movie you just watched. That's really enjoyable. Not every film has that. We're going to go see Solo next week, me and my wife, and I'm sure I'll enjoy it. I hopefully will. But I don't think I'll be analyzing deep themes about the Star Wars film. But this is a film that you can talk about a lot of different things, talk about family, talk about love, talk about spirituality. And it does it in a very subtle, grounded way. And the film is about more than just sex. Yes, there is a sexual aspect to the movie, but I don't feel like it's gratuitous. I don't feel like it's a Skinamax kind of over-the-top sensibility to it. I think it goes to the heart of the characters, and there's a lot to really discuss with the viewer. And I highly recommend this. Obviously, if you need a film that explains everything to you, if you need a film with nonstop action, I doubt this film was going to interest you in the first place. You're probably not going to a lot of films at Landmark Keystone Arts if you need Fast and the Furious style plot pacing. But if this looked like something that interests you, I think you will be pleasantly surprised that this film has got a lot going for it.
Yeah, it's good. The pacing of it is great. The story moves along at a very good rate. And it's a story about the lives of these people. And we have so few films in America that do that. And this is a British film, but it's released in America. And there are some Americans involved. But I think it's Bleecker Street, the production company. They came out with some terrific material, and they've put this out. So I give them a great deal of credit. So I think we both agree that disobedience is something, unless it just the homosexual lesbian relationship just totally turns you off, probably shouldn't go. Other than that, it's a film worth seeing. It's about the lives of people and how they struggle with some very basic parts of life and family and religion and all those things that you grow up with and how you deal with it as an adult. Any further comments on disobedience?
No, I really enjoyed the film. I didn't bring up the one moment that made me cringe.
Let's not talk about that.
I didn't bring it up, but I just say for the viewer, there might be one moment in the movie that you cringe at, but don't let that ruin the movie for you. It's a great movie.
It's still a good film. That doesn't mean there's anything wrong. There have been some cringeworthy moments in other films we like.
So exactly.
Don't see the film for that reason. Just want to say one quick thing. The Cannes Film Festival continues. We'll probably know by the next week who wins the big Palme d'Or, the big prize there, and then some of the other films that get attention. Well, there was an interesting New York Times article by the reporter they sent out there who basically said, you know, the thing about the Cannes Film Festival is it's I think the headline was the best and the worst from Cannes. Like some of these films that are getting fêted there, really, if you watch them, they're not that great. But there are many very, very good cutting-edge films that also deserve attention. And it's a little bit difficult to see how much attention these will get in the United States or in the world market. But we'll know a little bit more about that next week. But we do have two outstanding guests coming up. We have Nikki Reddington, who has her own company and works with film and has some great stories to tell. And we have two Hamilton Southeastern high school students who have just produced a film as part of their extracurricular club. And I think you'll enjoy hearing about that. Any last comments from Adam?
Not today.
Then we appreciate you listening. Stay with us. Adam and I will be back. You're listening to Hamilton County Goes to the Movies. Our podcast originates at Donatello's Italian Restaurant, 9 West Main Street in the downtown Carmel Arts and Design District. When the rain's away, the outdoor tables are out and available at Donatello's. Enjoy a delicious Italian meal. Do so right on Main Street in Carmel. Let's check in with Adam now and listen to our first interview this week.
And we've got today's guest with us, Nikki Reddington. You might have seen her on social media with her page Nikki's Network. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, gentlemen, for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
So, start off, tell everyone who's listening, what is Nikki's Network? How did you start it, and kind of what is it?
Well, Nikki's Network is a platform, mostly on Facebook and YouTube, and I offer ways for businesses and events to be able to help promote what's going on in their business. So I basically introduce businesses and events on social media.
So part of the reason you've had you here today is you've had a lot of connections with Heartland Film Festival, with local filmmakers to help promote what's going on. What is it about kind of the local movies that really piques your interest?
Well, I admire the vision and their hard work of putting it together. And since doing interviews with filmmakers last year at the Heartland Film Festival, it really opened my eyes because I just go to a theater and sit down, have popcorn, and watch the movie. But all of the behind the scenes and everyone, the team of people it takes to put it all together and make it happen, and I just, it's very fascinating.
Well, and Adam and I have talked to a lot of those people who are behind the scenes, and it is amazing what one of the people that I was fascinated with, we had one on the show of several months ago, are stunt people. Now, I don't know if you've dealt with any of them or not, but that's a whole different breed of person, and it's not just men. I've met some women who do stunt work. They're just amazing. Talk about what you've experienced there.
Well, actually, I was just in Los Angeles last weekend, and I went to Universal Studios, and they had a show about special effects, and that was another division that I never thought of, stunt people. It's not really the actor doing things and how precision they are. If there's a fighting scene, how close they come to the face or their body and the sound effects, and it looks like it looks so real. So that was really fascinating to be able to see that. And like you said, just another division of making movies.
I've seen the show they put on in Orlando, which is similar. And the interesting part of that is they came up with a storyline where they were able to show us just about every stunt angle that you could find, you know, all the different things that are done. And you watch that and you think, wow, you know, first thing I think about is the technology involved, but also the risks they take. Even with all the safety procedures, these people all get beat up in the regular type of work that they do.
Oh, yes, and catching themselves on fire and all kinds of things. So it's pretty incredible that they choose to do that.
So you were one of the same events that we covered, opening night of Heartland this year.
Yes.
And there was a red carpet, and you were one of the red carpet reporters there. And you got a chance, just as we did, to interview Rob Reiner.
Yes.
So how cool was that?
That was like one of the neatest experiences, especially I just started Nikki's Network that January. So I was only out and about for a few months, and to be able to have the opportunity to interview Mr. Reiner, and it was really neat. And I was able to, you know, ask him different questions as well, along with LBJ. And I really think it's fascinating to meet people because they are just people, and they have a lot of interests and uniqueness about them as well. So it was really fun. We had, I think, he had a good time on the red carpet.
Yeah, and people, it's really sad because the film didn't do as well as he'd hoped, but I thought it was a pretty good film. It wasn't his best, but I think Adam came up with the very best question anybody asked on the red carpet. He asked Rob Reiner, what's your favorite quote from Princess Bride?
That's right, I remember that. What did he say?
I think it was my name is Inigo Montoya.
That's it. Yeah. That's the one.
But yeah, you asked him about Spinal Tap, though. And
I did. Just, you know, because, you know, we want to be a little different. Mm-hmm. And since we kind of are independent, we had the liberty, I think, to ask other questions rather than being owned by a network. So, yes, I would just kind of put it out there with some of my colleagues. If, you know, I'm going to interview Rob Reiner, what do you want to know about, or what should I ask him? And one of my business associates said, well, ask him, you know, to take it to 11 from Spinal Tap. So immediately I looked on YouTube. I'm like, I've never heard, you know, I've heard of it, but I didn't know exactly. Yeah. And so then Rob told me his take it to 11 story about meeting Elon Musk right when he was the Tesla came out and they were at the same party, and Elon said, "Rob, come and check out my new Tesla." He goes, "I love Spinal Tap so much, so get in the car." Well, Elon Musk turned the radio on, and I guess all the Teslas, he made the volumes go up to 11.
Oh, that's pretty.
So that's pretty cool. That is neat.
One good thing I gotta say about Rob Reiner, and he was very nice, is so if you're an actor, director, and you're doing a media circuit, you've talked to about this movie so many times, and you probably answer the same questions over and over again. So sometimes we in the public will see, I'll just say Chris Hemsworth, although I think Chris Hemsworth is probably a nice guy. I just threw a random name out there. But he's doing a million interviews, and maybe he gives a sarcastic answer one time, and people say, "Oh, God, he's so rude. What
a jerk." What everybody's going to remember.
But you know what?
Answer.
Give the guy a break. He had to answer the same question 20 times in a row.
That's right.
And Rob Reiner, we were very new at the podcast. We were one of the last people to get a chance to interview him. But you know what? I give him credit because the movie was about to start. He was rushing in. He took the time and answered some questions. And he didn't have to. He could easily say, "I'm done. I said 15 minutes and that's it. I'm going to move on." Mm-hmm. But he was incredibly nice to every journalist. And even when someone tried to interrupt him and say, "Hey, can I talk to you, get a picture?" He said, "Not right now. I'm talking to this journalist," and I really appreciated that. I thought it was really nice of him.
And we tried to be nice to him because we knew he was getting ready to see the film, so we kept it to two questions.
Yeah,
it was a very brief interview.
Yes.
We felt it was nice for him to come over and say a few words to us. But I think that I think this whole movie business thing has always fascinated me. I have a nephew who's in Los Angeles, in the area of Los Angeles, and trying to get into the entertainment business. And basically, you start as a production assistant. You're basically a gopher when you start out. And it's a pretty tough business to finally break in and do what you really want to do. What have you gleaned from the conversations you've had with people who are in the business?
Well, and I've heard their struggles, and they do it obviously because it's their passion and they love it. Because just like maybe any major league sport, there are a lot of players out there, but only a certain percentage make it to the big leagues or to the NFL. And I believe that is with film as well. There's only, there's so many filmmakers or so many movies. Well, and what is the process? How does it make it to the big screen? And the process to go through that and the money involved and the hard work. And that's why I admire filmmakers and people in film, because they're doing it because they love it, first of all.
What do you think makes because you've covered a lot of Heartland Film Festival events. Mm-hmm. What do you think it is about Heartland that makes it so special?
Well, it has been around. I believe this is the 26th or 27th year, and their new president that came about a year and a half ago, Craig Prater, his vision and his background with other film festivals, being running the San Diego Film Festival, having an assignment, being like a director of the Bangkok Film Festival, with his experience and bringing in top-level films and filmmakers, and I just believe that he, just in the first year, and a lot of people that I interviewed during the film festival, they said they could already tell a big difference just in a year since Craig came on board, just because he knows what he's doing as well, and he has a different take and vision on the film festival, and to be able to bring a lot of international filmmakers to the scene as well for Indianapolis. So it looked like, sound like Indianapolis audience was very open, and they loved the films during the film festival. So it was wonderful to be around local filmmakers, international filmmakers, and just residents around Indianapolis, just the thrill and the excitement of being a part of the film festival.
What have you learned the most with your experiences with Heartland? What have you learned about the film business, or just anything you've learned with your involvement with that organization?
Well, I've learned that, not every film makes it. And just the number of people that when you see the credits after the movie, there, then there's also a lot of people that do not make the credits, you know, and I just think it's just fascinating how it all happens. And I interviewed director Jeremy Culver and actress Charlene Clossy and their executive producer Jennifer Clossy, and they were talking about they filmed their No Postage Necessary using 35 millimeter Kodak. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about the significance and the longevity of the film, you know, of that type of film. And again, that was one, you know, topic that was just very new to me. So it was very interesting to sit down with a director like that and talk about 35 millimeter Kodak.
I think a million too, that's really not what most filmmakers use, to put that in perspective. That's more like what you would have used in your home years ago when you had home movies, which are kind of out of date now with all the video equipment. But I got to say one quick thing that you mentioned about international flavor at Heartland, because last year one of the most interesting things I had a chance to do was sit in on a panel discussion of film critics. And let's see, I'm trying to remember who all that. Richard Probst was there. Who's the film yak fellow? Christopher Lloyd.
Christopher Lloyd.
And he was there. And Chaz Ebert, who was, as we all know, her husband, Roger. I grew up watching him and helped me really start to love special kind of films. But Chaz was the moderator. But there was another person on that panel, and I cannot remember his name. He's from Europe.
Klaus Ader.
Thank you so much. I've forgotten his name. You remembered it. And he added an awful lot to that panel. And here's what struck me, and I'm kind of curious what you think of this. As film critics, you know, Adam and I've done criticism in and out and just started again here lately. Anytime I see a film, I don't want to see any critics' reviews, if I can possibly help it, before I see a film. Maybe afterwards, but after I've got my own impressions of it, and it's before I write my review. This fellow said in Europe, the new trend is people are writing their notes, writing their reviews as they're watching the film. And in Europe, you have people with their laptops as the credits are rolling. And you were talking about credits. As the credits roll for about a couple of minutes, maybe three at the most. Some of these people have already posted their reviews before the credits are done in the screening that they're in. I mean, that just blows my mind. I mean, they do things a little differently in Europe. Even most Americans, if they had the opportunity, I'm not sure that most American critics would do that. What do you think of that whole idea of, with the technology today, you can have instant criticism after you see something?
Well, I think it's great. I think it also brings excitement to the film. Since it's, you know, something happening right when the film is happening and right when the film is released or pre-released, from an actual film critic to be able to get minute to minute, kind of like during a baseball, you're getting minute to minute plays by the commentary.
Sure.
So in one way, I think it's pretty neat.
So now, Larry, I had my idea of just reviewing the movie based on the trailer. And
Adam has actually done that before.
It looks terrible. Or just the poster. You know what? This one, the poster looks like this.
Now, when my wife and I go to a film, we'll look at each other and we'll say yes or no, we don't want to see that one.
So just from the trailer. Sometimes you can tell right away.
Now, one guest that you've had on your show and we've had on ours is Demetrius with
Submerge Echo 51.
Echo 51. I was going to say Area 51. No, it's Echo 51. And he's really kind of created a whole universe for his sci-fi characters and keeps branching that off. He was probably a fun person for you to meet and interview and kind of be involved in all that.
Yes, he is one creative fella and very nice, sweet. And, you know, I just love it that when you were saying, Adam, that he's created this universe around Echo 51, and he's bringing out new releases, you know, different films playing on Echo 51, like a series. And they're getting into the gaming, their clothing, tennis shoes, I mean, all kinds of things that, you know, Star Wars does and a lot of those type of movies do. They have merchandise to go along with it. So, and it's really neat that he's a local filmmaker right here and making all of that happen. So it's pretty neat that how he has been building this.
So part of your company or your network is to help promote what's going on. And people can hire you to promote their business or their film. Talk about how important it is, do you think? You made a movie, maybe you made a really good movie. The promotion side is so important in order to get people to want to see this and to find out about what's going on.
Well, yes, the promotion side is important. A lot of filmmakers or a lot of business owners, they are so busy making the film or so busy getting the business started, running the business, that some do not have time nor feel comfortable with or even know how to do the promotion side. So they're so busy doing all the other things, and that's why I've offered Nikki's Network for people to give them a platform so they can just sit and, you know, I can ask questions like the public would or any of the client would, just to help get, you know, so they could just to help them talk about what's going on.
I've known a lot of business owners, and some people who open a new business for the first time think all we have to do is just open our business and people will come. Then they realize, oh, that didn't work out very well. So they finally realize we have to advertise, we have to do promotional activities, and if they don't hire an agent, they've got to go out and find that themselves by talking to different salespeople. So tell me about business people, and maybe show business if you can kind of shoehorn that in, about what the difficulties are by getting the word out about what you're doing, and when people may not know, they may have no other way of knowing otherwise. Just talk a little bit about that whole concept.
About how people find out about what they're doing?
How you facilitate that, right?
Yes. Well, I set up an interview platform for similar to what you're doing here, just so the business owner, filmmaker, entrepreneur can put themselves in front of the camera and let them be known on social media. So the social media audience, it's a great way for the social media audience to meet them, hear in their own words about their company, organization, and it's just a great way to have, you know, to show their personality and to help give them a voice. 'Cause a lot of people I've talked to, even if they're in the film industry, some of them just do not feel comfortable just pressing play on the phone and just starting to talk about what they're doing. Because they said, well, trying to talk into the abyss, it just doesn't seem natural. Mm-hmm. I don't know where to start. There's so much about my film, you know. So that's why I kind of facilitate that, being the commentary, if you will, just to help them be a little more organized and give them a very deliberate message. And since it is going through Facebook or something like YouTube, it doesn't ever expire. So they can use that video however they want forever.
I was interviewing people at 12 Stars Media, which is a video production company in Fishers, and they just recently produced a full-length feature documentary called Finding Huga, which was just screened at Indy Film Fest. I'm trying to get the name right. And when I interviewed them about that, I just asked an open-ended question, and the director looked at me and said, "You've got to ask me a more specific question than that." So I did, yeah. But it was because he didn't know where to start. It goes back to what you were saying. Mm-hmm. If you just say, talk about your business, no, you have to ask a specific question. Tell me about how you came up with the idea for this film or something very specific. Yes. Then you've triggered that creative process that can explain how that happened.
Exactly.
Any comments along those lines about what you experienced?
Exactly. That is the whole gist of Nikki's Network and what I offer. It's just asking them a few questions that anyone else maybe would ask. So I kind of go in blindly, if you will. Now, I do a lot of research. I do a lot of homework on the person, their business, or their film. But I kind of keep it basic about the questions. Like, you know, they're the expert. They know more about any, you know, about their business or what they're doing than anyone. And it just to help start getting them to talk, you know. And then after a couple minutes, you know,
Can't get them to stop talking.
Exactly.
It's funny, though. You find people who are actors who get on stage or on screen, and they're big personalities, and then you put a microphone in their face, and sometimes they clam up. And it's like, wait a second. I thought you're used to being in front of a crowd, in front of hundreds of people. And it goes, well, yeah, that's easier than one-on-one.
But there's a difference there. And the difference is that actor or actress on stage or on film, they have a script.
That's right.
And you know, if you don't have a script, you act differently. Tell me about what you've experienced that way.
Yes, having a script, they're so used to having someone else write what they need to say, or you know, their role is, and they're used to playing roles instead of just playing themselves. So that goes back to what you're saying, Larry and Adam, that, you know, they can be on stage, on the big screen, being like a wonderful actor, but then when they're not acting anymore, you're just asking them a question that hasn't been rehearsed or practiced. They're their own person now instead of their character.
I will tell one quick story. So, you know, you've probably interviewed Larry and Nikki, some people that were kind of famous, Rob Reiner being one. So when I was at the college newspaper at IU, the Indiana Daily Student, I did some writing for the weekend section, and you get to do the phone interviews with some famous people and bands. And one of the sometimes they were not very eager to talk to a college student at a college newspaper. And the one who was the most irritated to have to talk to me was Carrot Top. Yes.
Oh, my, seriously.
Carrot Top was not happy that at this point in his career, he was talking to a sophomore at IU. And I did my research. I was like, sure. Oh, his brother was in NASA. And I started asking him questions. I'm like, oh, so your brother is an astronaut? Like, tell me about that. You know, and he goes, yeah, he's an astronaut. Yeah, big deal. And I'm like, okay. All right.
Wow.
I guess you're a little different on stage. On the phone, he was like, how long is this going to be? Because I'm, you know.
Most comics, though, they're the best interviews. They just come off the top of their head. A while back, I don't think it's running now, but Turner Classic Movies ran several clips of the old Johnny Carson shows interviewing actors and actresses. And if you go back and look at those, what you find is, you know, that's one of those settings where you don't have a script.
Right.
And I remember watching Henry Fonda. I said, I watched the interview. This guy's really boring in an interview setting. He's a terrific actor, mm-hmm. but nobody wrote him a script, and he didn't have lines. So he was just trying to answer, and Carson asked the usual questions, and he just didn't really seem to have very good answers. And it was true of a lot of actors, mm-hmm. not all, but a number of actors who just can't come off the ad lib thing. But I'm surprised to hear that, because comedians are usually pretty good on
the other path. Awkward one I did, and this is now timely in the news. Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, no.
So twice, yeah, I was in Jacksonville covering. Basically, I was the weekend reporter for the Florida Times Union, and I covered him twice. One was right when he announced that he was running for president, and Florida was the state that he thought he was going to do really well in, because the demographics worked well for more of a New Yorker, more of a, at that time, seemed like more socially liberal Republican. And he had a big rally, and there was a bunch of people. Fast forward to about 2-3 months later, after he basically had third or fourth place finishes in several primaries and hadn't campaigned in Iowa or New Hampshire or South Carolina and was pinning all his hopes in Florida, they send me as a reporter to the airport because Rudy Giuliani is doing a layover and will talk to some media in between flights. I was the only reporter that showed up, 23, 24 years old, putting a recorder in his face, and I asked him, so do you think this campaign strategy is working? And he goes, oh, yeah, it's a sound strategy. It's going to work. I'm like, Rudy, I'm the only one here, and I'm 24 years old. Do you think maybe?
But well, then your experience to be able to interview Rudy Giuliani, you know, at that age of 24.
But he's back on camera now saying all sorts of things, right?
Well, we won't get into that. That's another issue. And yeah, we could have a lot to say, but this is a film podcast. But I want to ask you, if I can, Nikki, just one last question from me. Mm-hmm. And that is, you're building, how long have you been in business now with the website, YouTube and Facebook?
Yes, January, February. About a year and a half, going on a year and a half.
So if somebody is listening to this podcast and they think they could use your service, how can one get in touch with you?
Well, thank you very much. Nikki's Network, NICKIS Network, and that's my Facebook page. And that would be the best way to get a hold of me, or they can message me, Nikki Reddington, or Nikki's Network on Messenger. I'd be happy to talk with them.
Well, thank you so much, and maybe we'll see you on the red carpet soon.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
Yeah, that's right. It's coming up this fall, the Heartland Film Festival, so we'll all be excited about that. Nikki, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you both for having me. I appreciate it.
Hamilton County Goes to the Movies is available on most podcasting platforms, including iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn, and Stitcher. If you enjoy Hamilton County Goes to the Movies, tell your friends, share links to our podcast. Now, on to the next segment this week. Back at Hamilton County Goes to the Movies, today we're going to talk about a student film that was put together by students at Hamilton Southeastern High School. The name of the film is Iris. It's a production of Olio Road Productions. And this is the teacher that helped them create this is the man by the name of Jeremiah Folis, and he is the advisor to the film club, which is an extracurricular activity. I guess there have been some efforts to make this a four-credit class, but so far, no luck. So it's still an extracurricular activity. Iris is a film. I have seen a trailer, and it's all about dreams. That much I can clearly tell you, and I'm hoping to see the film very soon. You premiered it just the night before we're recording this. Our guests today are Abigail Wirtz, W-I-R-T-Z. Abigail Wirtz is the producer of Iris, and as the producer, she oversees everything about the film, which is what a producer does anywhere, Hollywood or here. This would include all the logistical issues, all the communications, just running things smoothly, all the way from the pre-production meetings all the way to the premiere that happened last night. And Abigail is planning a career in media. She's going to do a double major of entrepreneurship and media at Indiana University. So you want to start your own company, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Good for you. Abigail, thanks for joining us. Jake Ledford is also here. He's the director of the film Iris. He was put in charge of the creative part. That's what directors do, making sure all the scenes run smoothly. Now, he does not plan to have a film as part of his college career, but he would like to continue filmmaking as a hobby. Where do you plan to go to school, Jake?
Purdue.
Going to Purdue. Not normally a film school, but you never know. Mm. But both of you, thank you so much for joining us today. Really and appreciate the fact you took part of your Saturday to come join us. So how did the premiere work out last night? What kind of crowd did you have, Abigail?
The premiere turned out more than we could have hoped. We ended up selling out of tickets at our second showing. We had sold over 300 tickets for the night in total, which exceeded expectations, and we were really, really happy with how it turned out.
So, Jake, what did it feel like to see your creation up on the big screen and having lots of other people watch it?
So, this was actually my second year doing this club, and last year, a lot of things kind of fell through, I think, in terms of marketing, and our crowd turnout wasn't as big as we expected it to be. But this year, to see like this huge of a crowd on a project this big, it was like me and our other co-director, we just felt like so exhilarated to be up there. And it was just something so exciting because, only one night a year, it's like something you don't really get to feel, something that exciting that often.
And obviously you were, so what kind of feedback did you get, Abigail? And people walked out of the theater, did you, or out of the auditorium in this case, did you talk to people, get feedback from them? What did you hear?
Yeah, we met with a lot of people after the movie finished, and the resounding opinion was that it went very, very well. The audience really enjoyed it, and one thing that we kept hearing a lot of was that people were very confused and weren't sure they understood much of it, but they still loved it anyways.
Those are the best movies. I'm sorry. They really are.
That's exactly what our writer, Spencer Lawson, was going for, so he was very happy to hear that.
So how would you describe it? I know you don't want to spoil it, so but you're... You know best what to spoil and not to spoil. For how long is it, by the way?
92 minutes.
92 minutes. So tell us a little about the story that you can give away.
Well, you want to do that, Jake? Or
yeah, start I can that? Do it.
Sure.
So essentially, our main character, Olivia, she's an ambitious high schooler who likes to study, who's begin liking to study the nature of dreams surrounding her school. And she discovers that nightmares have been spreading throughout the school, not just through one person, but it seems like multiple students around the school have been having these kind of similar concurrent nightmares. And so she essentially wants to find out what's causing these. But as she is going through this journey to find out what's happening along with her friends, she finds that the lines between both reality and what she's dreaming are starting to blur together. So essentially, what she's able to tell what's real and what isn't is kind of coming together. And so I think it's an ambitious project because we've talked about this a lot. And if you've taken a look at our past Olio Road films, is those are kind of more like realistic based, very realism, drama based. But with this project, we really wanted to go outside of the box and take something that we've never done before and really just try and go at it. And I think in the end, especially with feedback, I think we did a well-rounded job and more than we could have asked for.
So when you go ahead, Larry.
I was just going to ask one more question of Abigail before I turn it back over to Adam. Obviously, when you decide you're going to do a film at your club, you have all these potential ideas. I read a little bit about how you came up with this idea. To explain to the audience how your group decided to do this film with this particular subject matter.
So typically the script is one of the first things that's chosen at the start of the year. And we find the directors typically based on that because directors will usually have a genre of script that they prefer. And so we'll have a writing meeting. There's just an open call out to anybody who's in the club. And writers can pose their idea for a script or even bring a script. So when Spencer Lawson came to us at the start of the year, he had a completed 70-page script, which... That's very enticing.
He had
enticing.
The script written already? Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Spencer and I had met earlier in the year, and I had been going on and on and on about the club. So he had started working on that, and by the time we came to the meeting, it was 70 pages long. And that was a very enticing option. So
the group went for that one right away.
Yes. We have a democratic vote process, and so he came out on top.
So when you're portraying dreams or nightmares on film... What kind of thought was put into how you want to portray it to give it like a dreamlike feel? How much should look realistic versus how much should look kind of out of place or different?
Yeah, definitely. That's that was obviously one of the biggest questions because when you're a filmmaker, you don't want to always say things like up in front, like this is this or X is Y. You want to kind of give like subtle hints to things. And so when we were making the film, we wanted to say, how can we show that this is a dream or how can we show that this isn't real, like through other like methods or other like symbols. And so really some of the biggest ones are color, obviously. So whether colors are super exaggerated or like super desaturated, we can use that to show that, hey, this wasn't, this is actually in her head or this isn't what it might seem. A part of that too is our music. We had an original score written by Max Arney. So obviously, certain points of the film, when the music seemed to got kind of an eerie tone or something that felt out of place, that was our chance to deliver a message to the audience that we didn't want to say up in front.
So you want to make it subtle enough that it's not like banging people over the head with "this is a dream."
Yeah.
I did wavy lines, but you wanted to make it obvious. Like there's a balance, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So, Abigail, when you started trying to figure out in a storyboard or whatever process you used to figure out how you're going to illustrate these dreams and work on these projects and then on the project of the different scenes you're going to have to put together. So people can understand it's a dream and the special effects you would be able to use with the technology that you had. How did you go through that process?
Since we're students, a lot of it is based on the restrictions of what our abilities are and what resources we have. But it's ultimately a really organic process, and we usually leave that to when we're all on set together and we just kind of bounce ideas off of each other, and the directors and the writer especially will have conversations about exactly what information they want to convey with the visuals, and then we'll just try out a few different things. We'll have our lighting in a few different colors or intensities or combinations and have our shots move in a few different ways and just work and move all the different variables until we figure out exactly how we want to tell that story.
So how much of that was done in post-production where you had to go back and maybe, you know, do use some kind of technology to get the point across?
There was a lot of color grading, I know, that went into manipulating that so that we could create the distinction between dreams and reality a little bit more clear. But we definitely put a lot of effort on set into creating color themes, creating those kind of surrealistic qualities to the shot so that when it came time to doing it in post, there wouldn't be that much extensive work to do.
Now, I know you're, Jake, I think both of you are fans of like psycho dramas, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. When you, as I understand the process, you decided not to go so much for that, but the dreams would be a better way to reel the audience in. Tell me a little about that.
So, really, that's So when Spencer had initially written the script, they were like, I'll start with this.
Sure.
If you ask any writer or director in Hollywood, you'll find that the director's job is to ruin the writer's vision. Because obviously when a writer writes it, he has one thing in his head, but then he kind of pitches it off to us. And
so was the writer on set when you were shooting
this?
Oh,
yeah, for sure.
He was causing you all kinds of trouble, is that it? I'm kidding.
Actually, his secondary job would be a script supervisor. So essentially being on set to make sure that we're kind of still completing without going way off the charts of what he had. But yeah, so essentially he has to give his script to us and then entrust us with creating it. And so trying to reel people in with a subject like this, obviously there's already a lot of movies that deal with dreams in it. So a big challenge was how can we create something different that people don't think of like a stereotypical like dream type movie when they hear of us. And so really conveying that message, especially through marketing, came as a challenge. And so we kind of did that through a couple different ways. Well, for one, this is more, obviously we have high school students. A lot of the times in big, I haven't seen really big like Hollywood budgeted movies with dreams centered around like so this kind of target age group. And I think just that whole marketing genre in general really kind of made it more fun and unique for us as a club to try and make this stand out apart from other movies with a similar subject.
So in a Hollywood production, schedule is really important because you've got people that are getting paid by the hour, and if you go over time, it's costing you more money, especially in the old days when you shot on film, you only had so much film and you didn't want to shoot hours and hours of expensive footage. Now, you don't have the same problem with paying people, but you still have scheduling issues, I'm sure. People are doing different things. You've only got so much time. Talk a little bit about the challenges there to pre-plan and make sure you're staying on schedule when it comes to making a movie.
Yeah, because obviously that actually is probably, I would say, one of our top three biggest challenges is scheduling. Because as our club sponsor, Mr. Foss, would say, this is the closest you'll ever get to a lifelike like Hollywood experience, unless you actually go into Hollywood. But obviously the difference is, well, those are their full-time jobs. We also have school and other clubs, and we have sports, and we have... people just have other things going on and on top of this club in general. So our producers, I'm really glad we have them because they're a lot more organized than I am, and they have like tons of spreadsheets, and we have like calendars really just listing like when can people film and when can they not, and really just kind of moving just pieces around to find out when we can film and when we can't. And it got easier as the year went on because we started to kind of figure out everyone's schedules. But at the start of the year, and I think at the start of every production, it's kind of rocky at the start. And then obviously you'll get to the point where it's like you're going strong. It's really uphill.
So, Abigail, did you shoot most of the scenes at HSC High School, or did you go out in the community and shoot some of them?
We definitely pushed outside of the high school a lot more this year as compared to other films that Olio Road has done. This year was actually really exciting for us because we took a road trip to Columbus, Indiana, left at, I believe, 5 in the morning in early April or March, and we went down to Columbus expecting it to be totally green and summery, and on this particular day, it was hard-packed snow and ice. So that created some interesting challenges for filming, but it was such a rewarding experience, and we spent the entire day there. And just expanding that map of where Olio Road has gone with our film is really cool, and it just kind of like pushed a new boundary for what we could get done.
Without giving too much away, why did you choose Columbus as a site? Would that give too much away if you said that? Okay.
No. A lot of us have recently seen the film Columbus that came out in 2017. So that was definitely on our minds when we approached picking locations for some of the scenes that we had left to film. And I can specifically remember thinking, it'd be really cool if we had a shot at this one covered bridge. And so we were looking up all the covered bridges that were near us, but the only one we had, like the closest one, was in Columbus. And so at first we just said, this isn't going to work. We're going to have to find something else. We kind of hung on to the idea and said, what if we just made a day-long road trip out of this? And what if we just did it? And it worked out. We got some really, really beautiful scenes there.
Well, yeah, Adam and I really thought, we thought Columbus was, if not the best, one of the best films we saw last year. So anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, so when we were, because obviously, as she said, when we went down there, it was like hard packed snow. So as from my standpoint, from a creative standpoint, it's really difficult. And we kind of had to move around, maneuver around with different pieces because we were expecting more bright green colors, but now everything's white and kind of bland. And so it really took... it was a challenge, but I think it was fun trying to come up with a new way of how we can convey a certain message through those scenes. But I think it was really rewarding, as Abigail said in the end, because we originally weren't even gonna like shoot that little portion at all. But because like other circumstances, we had our writer wrote it in, and I think it was ended up tying our whole story together in a much more complete way. And it felt like a more complete story in the end.
Let me ask you this. Do high school students talk about their dreams with each other?
Sometimes when they're interesting. There are some special ones that I won't be let to live down.
So is that, I guess the reason I'm asking, kind of a leading question, is that, did that lead you into the storyline or the writer's storyline? Or was it just a way to get to kind of something close to a psychodrama without being a psychodrama?
Interestingly, Spencer had the idea for the script over the summer, and he's told us that it started with 5 words that he wrote down when he, for some reason, woke up in the middle of the night, and I believe it was circus, dark, parasol, and something else. It's complete gibberish, not even a complete sentence, and somehow that spiraled into the script that we have now, and it's been through 8 revisions, so it's certainly been a process, but I couldn't be more happy with the story.
8 really isn't that many, if you think about it. For a 90-minute film, 8 revisions, you did pretty well there.
Yeah, originally it was going to be shorter, but so I hope I'm allowed to talk about this. But so actually halfway through the year, we had a complication with one of our actors, and unfortunately he actually had to move, and he didn't know about it, and we didn't know about it. And so it really created a challenge because we wanted to be able, we didn't want to give up, because you know, we're already halfway knee deep into this film, and at this point our lead actor is moving away, and we kind of say to ourselves, all right, what are we going to do now? And so at that point I was kind of like, I feel like a lot of people are going to quit on us, but in fact the exact opposite happened, and a lot of people actually really got together, and I think that actually motivated people more to kind of want to complete this even more and make it work out too. And I believe and we like had how I think it was like five times more hours in our second semester of work put in compared to our first one. So when I thought that people were going to leave on us, I think it kind of rallied them together. And as a direct, from a director standpoint, that really just like made me like really happy to see that people were this passionate about it.
Well, I love your topic because I think dreams can really say a lot of things about who you are as a person and have a lot of meaning to them. Although I do warn, when you get married and your wife gets mad at you for something you did in her dream, you're like, no, honey, dreams are meaningless. It's just a dream.
So, I've heard that one from my parents too.
But talk about, what do you think the importance of dreams are?
Well, I think dreams can really like unveil emotion that you might normally wouldn't want to say like in person. And we definitely show that in this movie, because at points in this movie, there are things that happen in a character's head or in a character's dreams that they wouldn't say in reality, but that reveal stuff about their character. And we don't make that quite as obvious at first, but as the story unravels, you start to see that more. And I think it's really interesting because it adds another layer to storytelling and another depth to the characters that you wouldn't get from like a face value. And I think that's really important in, when it comes to dreams and storytelling.
Well, let me ask you this. You've already had your premiere. So, Abigail, will there be any opportunities for other opportunities for people to see your film?
Yes. We currently have another showing scheduled to be Saturday, May 26th at 9 a.m. at the Hamilton 16 IMAX. So we are very excited to have that opportunity.
Any last questions from Adam?
No, best of luck. What year are you in school?
We're both seniors.
Seniors. So you won't be in the club next year, but it'll be in good hands. They've got the next generation lined up already.
Yeah, we hoped we taught all the underclassmen well, and we hope they're... I think we prepare them well for the following years.
Well, you got to come back and share with them all the things you've learned in college and pass down that wisdom to the next generation.
So you're
going to
be a part-time filmmaker once you are out of college. You want to just do it on the side, have some fun with it?
I hope to, because I'm going to Purdue actually for like computer science, but I still really enjoy film so much. But for me, I see it as a very competitive industry to really get into. So I would still love to do it, just as more like a kind of a side thing, though.
I can tell you one thing. There are plenty of filmmakers around here that would love to have somebody with a computer science degree helping them out, because there's so much of that in filmmaking today. So you're wanting to do media to make a living. You're an entrepreneurship. That's your plan at IU. So I assume you have long-term plans to run your own company. Talk about that.
I do. The combination of entrepreneurship and media is something I settled on kind of recently. And a lot of it was because of my time in Olio Road Productions that I realized how much I love working on these creative projects, especially with the collaborative nature of them. And although I haven't really pinned down where I want my story to take me, I think that that's part of why I chose entrepreneurship, because I can kind of be in charge of that. And one of the avenues I see for myself is taking the sort of style we at Olio Road have for film production and using that in the professional world, because I think we're much more collaborative and open with each other, and we create more of like a family bond than my awareness of a traditional film set is, that we kind of break down some of those boundaries between what exactly your title is, and we let people work between departments, and that's something that I think Hollywood entirely would benefit from.
Well, I think your things you've learned about problem solving and flexibility and all of that are going to serve you no matter what business you start.
Jake, anything you want to say about the film before we go here?
I said this at the premiere last night. So I'll just kind of last note. I really think I've learned from this year. I think somebody on the set really taught me that one. I've been guilty of myself, but one of my biggest pet peeves now is when a film will open and it says a film by blah blah blah, because I think that doesn't really tell the entire story. Because even though you only see like actors on camera, behind the camera, besides the directors, there's dozens of people and dozens of hands doing a bunch of different things, trying just to get like this one like perfect shot. And I think that maybe if it says something said a film by Jake Ledford, that doesn't really tell how much work really goes into the film. And I think that kind of discredits the crew a lot, because I know for me that this would not have been possible without anybody else. I could not have done this completely by my own. And so I just like to put that out there. Even though Abigail and I are out here representing Olio Productions, that there's still dozens of people that put hundreds of hours into this club. And I think it turned out to be the better because of it.
Abigail, anything you'd like to say?
Kind of jumping off of what Jake said, Olio Road, just the entire spirit of it is the tireless dedication we see from our 40-something members. And this year we had a total of 1,265 hours. We kept very meticulous watch of that. And that number is still astounding to me. Just the fact that we've found so many students that are this passionate, that they're willing to spend over 1,000 hours outside of rigorous academics, and I don't know, we've created a family in that time, so It's been really fun.
So talk about your sponsor, Mr. Foles. I've never met him, but I've heard lots of stories about him. Jake, how important was it to have a faculty sponsor like him?
So Mr. Foles actually does have a background in like kind of film. So he's worked with Lucasfilms, and he's worked on the set of Supernatural. So he's actually been in like some actually Hollywood standard sets. And so I think that was kind of cool to have kind of like a guide for us, because he had that, at least that experience, because he knew what to do, because he was an art director when he was on those sets, and he had talked to a bunch of actually Hollywood people. One of the sets he had worked on, he worked with a cinematographer from The Dark Knight, and so just kind of him being able to like pick up tips and tricks there was really useful. And I think when he told us like certain things that we would never really have thought of if we weren't to have him there. And I think the club as a whole is like, and even his connections, I think for the club as a whole is really impactful. Abigail can correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a Hollywood producer, one of the executive producers from Justice League, a movie that came out last November, actually went to IU. And
Michael Uslan?
I can't remember his name exactly, but... he had heard about our club, and this club you don't really see this really anywhere else, because at most high schools and even in college, students will only create short films. Rarely will you ever see a full feature length film. And I think Mr. Foster told us that he had heard about this and wanted to start something similar to our club at IU. And I think that really just kind of shows our impact too. I think we're really trying to start something new that a lot of other places doesn't do. So Mr. Foles has been really fun to work with, just because his extensive background and knowledge made it really a lot easier to guide us through the process.
So anything about Mr. Foles you'd like to add, Abigail?
Yeah, one of the really beneficial aspects to having Mr. Foles lead our team is that he has a lot of great connections with the school, because first and foremost, we are a student production, and so Hamilton Southeastern Schools must approve of everything we produce. So he is, like, if we produce a film that has themes that the school may not want us to be sharing, that falls on him. And so there are a lot of legal, logistical issues that Mr. Foles has to oversee, and he does that perfectly. And along with his connections to the school and the school district, we're currently trying to expand Olio Road Productions and get into the junior highs and the intermediate schools and the elementaries, and see what we can do to get this love of filmmaking in students. And so Mr. Foles is integral to that process, because he helps us get those connections with interested teachers, interested administrators that can help us bring that to life.
I want to thank both of you for being here today. Abigail Wirtz, the producer, and Jake Ledford, the director. The film is Iris. It's premiered already, and May 26th at 9 a.m. at Hamilton Town Center's Hamilton 16. That's the next screenings, and I assume there'll be some others at some point. So just stay tuned on that one. Am I correct or incorrect on that?
There may be some future screenings down the road, but we have nothing pending yet.
Do you think it'll be available online at some point?
Mm-hmm. Yes. It'll be available probably within, I would say, either in the next several weeks or month on our YouTube channel, Olio Road Productions.
Okay, very good.
So, yes.
To both of you, thank you so much. Really enjoyed talking to both of you.
Thank you for having us.
This week, Adam and I highly recommend the film Disobedience, starring Rachel Weisz and Rachel McAdams. We both give it a B+ grade, with one caveat. If same-sex relationships offend you, the film Disobedience, well, it may not be for you. We thank our guests this week, Nikki Reddington, Abigail Wirtz, and Jake Ledford. Adam and I return next week for another edition of Hamilton County Goes to the Movies from Donatello's Italian Restaurant, 9 West Main Street in downtown Carmel. In the meantime, thanks for listening. We'll talk again.